Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Revenge comes in many forms. Personally, I take revenge in the death of relationships. If you do me dirty, then you'll soon find my hands clean of you. What happened? Why won't you talk to me? When can we work this out? Out of my face. Out of my life. I'm sorry, but there's no fixing for me at a certain point. I've seen it all before. I've seen beyond it before. Best we just part ways before this goes too far. I don't care enough to stay. You broke it. And if I have to stay, well then you'll get a ghost. You'll barely know I'm there. Though my presence will make things uncomfortable enough so that you'll eventually leave. I'm often left unsatisfied in my revenge, because it's not really revenge at all, it's just sad, really. The way I walk away from things, this is pathetic admitting this, but in many ways I'm left as the one hurting, the one wishing this could be different, but it can't be. If it's not organic, then it's not sustainable, simple, fresh, ethical, that's what I'm all about. It could be worse. Like with the case of Charlie Severance and his own personal motto, quote, knock, talk, enter, kill, exit, murder. A little redundant. Way cooler than mine, however. At least Severance doesn't sound like a hippie grocery store owner. At least he found a way to clearly separate, did Severance. And I'll try to lay off of this Severance puns. In fact, I'll cut it out right now. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The Knocker. I'm going to start this episode by letting you know that I'm fucked here. I was writing this episode while surrounded by a storm. And I know what's happened in the States with Hurricane Helene, Milton coming into Florida. I have listeners who have reached out to me and told me that their situation was so fucked up. They listened to me through it where they had downloaded podcasts. And I'm sure a lot of other podcasts and creators have gotten a lot of the same sentiment from people down there in the Carolinas. I was writing this in the midst of a storm here as well. I don't know if it's related, but the wind was incredible. And apparently it knocked out a lot of my writing, so I'm working off of notes here. But we'll get through it. I'll get through it. In comparison to what you all suffered in that situation, this ain't much. And I could work off of not much. Charles Stannard Severance was born September 25th, 1960 in Fairfax County, Virginia. His childhood was unremarkable. His father was a high-ranking naval officer, which meant Charles moved around a lot before his family settled in a quiet Fairfax, Virginia neighborhood where he enjoyed a quiet all-American upbringing. After high school, he attended university. He got a fucking engineering degree, and he was a bright student by all accounts. He was interested in politics. He was not shy to debate or more often so argue his positions, which as we all know these days isn't pleasant to be around. I'm of the mind that we need a localized war wherever we are to just appreciate other people's opinions on things and not act like we're ready to pop off at any moment, because we know the repercussions of such an act to pop off in the mouth. We're too loose. We're too loosey-goosey with the way that we affect and hurt each other with words. I think we need some hurt physically. And that's just my opinion. Charles was a bright student. Charles, he loved role-playing games, just like I do, and acting like a tough guy about such situations. He was a D&D product, I assume, Dungeons & Dragons. He created a game called Mental Disorder. This was a game widely based on Charles Severance's own life. Friends would say it was a well-thought-out and organized game, but it was uncomfortable to play with Charles. An example of one supposed fantasy scenario in Mental Disorder, the game he created, was eerily similar to the lockup Severance would eventually experience at a place he would call the Rebar Motel. That's a jail he'd eventually go to, the Rebar Motel. He had other scenarios that were similar to Dungeons & Dragons, where he would talk about your children being stolen away from you by the government. He had a website where he'd rant about mental health professionals and sell his game on that website. The website was named mentaldisorder.com. He had another fun game for his friends in fantasy roleplay where he'd be like a dungeon master. It was called, quote, Tomahawking a Homestead in the Backwoods of America. It rolls off the tongue. Now that one, I must admit, sounds like a winner. And what he was referring to there is the murders that he would eventually perpetuate. Sorry, I don't have my notes here. The murders in which he would eventually complete. Not with a tomahawk, but with a gun. Of course, the games he created sucked. They were just a way for Severance to vent his frustrations and share some of his crimes in a veiled way. Charles hated authority, especially cops. He would celebrate any news of the death of an officer and followed closely military news so he could gloat at the deaths of American soldiers. He had trouble holding down work. He was hired as an engineer, which is, you know, what he was from his schooling. He would do these little missions, as you would probably see them, in employment. And on those occasions, he would almost always get fired for arguing and pushing eccentric political views on coworkers and subordinates. To give you an idea, Charles Severance once showed up to work with a flag flying from his truck. That flag was that of the old Soviet Union, the pick and the sickle. In the late 90s, Charles was working as a mechanical engineer in Virginia for the Alexandria Wastewater Authority. He bought a small house on Gunston Road in the Delray area. He named this Gunston Manor. He then ran for mayor of Alexandria dressed like Neo from The Matrix. He got 10% of the vote in that. He then ran for Congress in 97, again for mayor in 2000. But in his younger years, he looked like a coal mine shooter. In later years, he looked like a basement scientist who just blew up a beaker and stepped outside for a smoke. Big beard, receding hairline, but big hair at the back. He's just a nut. He loved square dancing. He wanted it taught in schools. So it was one of his big platforms. We got to teach square dancing in schools, you know. This is going to bring people together when you hold each other by the hips and just move left to right. He punched a guy during a debate, just to let you know, once again, who we're dealing with here. The Woodrow Wilson Bridge was going to be built in Alexandria. It was going to connect to Maryland. And he was vehemently against the building plans. He thought it would ruin Alexandria. He considered himself too brilliant to be understood in these matters. And because he got 10% of the vote, he was kind of like, well, that means 10% of people understand me and 90% need to be educated. It's not that I suck, it's that you suck. In July of 1998, he met a woman at a country western bar line dancing situation. They hit it off and soon had a shotgun wedding. And Charles Severance, he soon became a father of a baby boy the following year. The marriage and Severance's foray into fatherhood lasted until the spring of 2000, about 1.5 years. Severance fought for custody of his son after his wife left him with their son, and he acted as his own lawyer in court. The judge became so disturbed by Severance's behavior in court He became so disturbed with his rants, Severance's rants against his boy and his mother and her attorneys, rants that bordered on threats, that additional guards were brought in for the lengthy appearances, drawn out by Severance's diatribes and mocking of the system and his ex-wife. It always amazes me how self-described genius types rarely have any self-awareness. It's almost as if they're stupid, in that sense. But like Charlie Manson, in the case of Charlie Severance, what we in reality have is a bona fide nut job. The real deal. Wiry figure, wacky hair, wild beard, and the eyeballs of a starved snake, ink pools, that will send a scrawl to the twisted brain attached to envision your end an infinite amount of ways should you cross them. It's never over with such men. Even should they take your life, they'll endeavor to eat your soul. There is a darkness that permeates from the Charles Severance type, the Charlie Manson type. They've allowed it, that darkness, to swallow themselves. And now, through the eyes and through the brain and through the spirit, it needs to feed for fun. Anyways, Charlie fails to get custody of his little boy. I don't know what he would do with him anyways if he got him. He doesn't want the boy. He wants to win. And through his performances during the litigation process, he manages only to convince the courts that he should never be allowed to see his son or his ex-wife again. In the end, he is only permitted to say goodbye, with guards between him and his little boy. Severance isn't even allowed to touch his child, for fear he will harm him in some way, grab him, and run away. In the writings of Severance, he will scratch down how his boy was kidnapped by the courts. The Parable of the Knocker is an excellent book written by the lead prosecutor in this case, Brian Porter. I recommend it for a deep dive on the court cases and writings of Charles Severance. You could find that on Audible, not sponsored. For some reason, they don't like me. I said something fucked up a long time ago, I think. I know. And you can find The Parable of the Knocker for free on Audible. For our purposes, as we head into the dark meat of this story, we should understand that on the court documents Severance was served with, stating he could not contact his ex and his boy, on those documents was the name Sheriff Jim Dunning. This would be the second time Dunning had come to the attention of Severance. He had some gun charges in the past and in the future from here. And in that area, the name always on his, on his court documents that he would read, all the fine print and the large print, the name Sheriff Jim Dunning was on it. But before we get to that and what he does about that, let's take a step back to find the first situation he was pissed with. January 23rd, 1997. He's 36 years old at this point, is Severance. He stopped in a truck of his on suspicion of stealing cans of food from a Alexandria grocery store. On him is eventually found a .380 semi-automatic pistol. It was loaded with one in the chamber, and he was reaching for it when they grabbed him. The safety was off. He spent 10 days in the quote rebar motel as a result of this incident. That's the Alexandria jail in Virginia. Sheriff Jim Dunning, his picture was in that jail. If you ever seen The Stand, the old movie of The Stand by Stephen King, it's just a little small town jailhouse, and the picture of the sheriff is on the wall, so he's staring at that for those days. So after this situation, the picture of Jim Dunning is in his mind. The name Sheriff Jim Dunning is in his mind. He's focusing on him as being the man who fucked his life. Jim Dunning, if I didn't mention it, was on the papers where his child was taken from him as well. So in December 2003, 56-year-old Nancy Dunning, the wife of Jim Dunning, they called her the Queen of Del Rey Alexandria. And the reason why is because she was known for transforming the area into a family-friendly place through her work as a realtor and philanthropist. She would do a lot of food drives and gift drives. for the less fortunate in the area. Sheriff Jim Dunning and her, Nancy, they had two kids together. And 2 weeks before Christmas, December 3rd, 2003, Nancy makes plans to meet for lunch with her husband, Sheriff Jim Dunning, and her older son, Chris, at her favorite restaurant. The restaurant was in the same strip mall as the Severance arrest for shoplifting 5 years previous that I mentioned. Again, forgive me, I'm working off of notes. Like, I'm fucking working here. So Nancy drives her gray Toyota that has the sheriff's plate on it and the Jim Dunning for Sheriff bumper sticker on it. These plates always make me laugh. I got a new vehicle recently and they asked me if I wanted customized plates. I was like, that's about the last thing that I want. Are you a firefighter? No. Are you involved with anything in the area? Are you a police officer? Are you, no. Like, why would you want everybody to know that that's who you are? I guess it's nice. I mean, if you're a firefighter, you're a hero. You're not getting paid very well to be a volunteer firefighter. I guess you wrap a red strip around your license plate that looks like fire and fucking talk about it nonstop to people. To be fair, the reason why they do that, they put the wrap on the fucking volunteer firefighter department people's license plates is because they need that to get to access the scene when they show up to a scene where there's a fire happening. I understand that. It's just mostly it seems like a weird flex for my local gas station jockey. That's all I'm trying to say.
Could this be your summer of discovery? Yeah, with Rosetta Stone it could be. Whether you're traveling abroad, planning a staycation, or just shaking up your routine, what better time to dive into a new language? With Rosetta Stone, you could turn downtime into meaningful progress. Rosetta Stone is a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your summer schedule. I've been using it to try to learn Japanese, as I mentioned already multiple times. I mean, Rosetta Stone and I are good friends at this point, and I'm surprised how quickly you can pick things up in bite-sized lessons. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're planning on going somewhere or interacting with someone who has another language underneath their belt or a country that is required to speak that language wherever you are in certain situations, you can pick up bite-sized things to get you by. And I really like that about it. And it makes you feel like you are learning when you haven't developed the entire scope of it. At least you have a foot in the door with these bite-sized lessons and learning with their true accent feature. Rosetta Stone is the trusted language expert. It has 30 years of experience teaching people. I mean, there's millions of users and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. Rosetta Stone is a go-to tool for real language growth. And you can learn faster, retain longer. The big thing with Rosetta Stone for me is that you get this lifetime membership with them when you sign on, and you just never know when it's going to come in handy. Whatever trip comes up in the future, you can prepare yourself with this in your back pocket. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential right now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor here at Dark Topic. And we're so excited to announce they've teamed up with Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, on two special edition products, a salted caramel chip protein bar and a yuzu mango hydration mix drink. And I've been eating a whole hell of a lot of salted caramel chip protein bars. I don't get sick of them. That's one thing I'll say about those. It's a great treat and decent for you, as well as the yuzu mango hydration mix drink. I mean, I'll have one before bed. I'll have one when I wake up in the morning. Something about it. I mean, really great flavor and makes me feel like I came back to life after I chug one of those bad boys. IQ Bars plant protein bars. They're mixed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit. The salted caramel chip IQ bar that I just mentioned there, it has 12 grams of protein and only 1 gram of sugar, and it has brain-boosting nutrients in it like lion's mane, adaptogen. The Yuzu Mango IQ mix is a refreshing zero-sugar hydration mix that marries bold flavor and essential electrolytes for your body and lion's mane plus magnesium for your brain. Just mix with water for Michelin star taste and next level hydration. 10% of sales, I should mention, go to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, which supports the next generation of aspiring U.S. chefs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain boost. Clearly, I didn't drink my Yuzu drink this morning. Brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. This is the snack that you should start stocking in your cupboards when you go to reach for that, you know, ice cream at night, that chocolate bar during the day. I'd suggest reach for an IQ bar. They sent me the salted caramel chip IQ bar, the Yuzu mango mix. And I mean, again, I've been going back and forth on those, and I just can't believe that something so delicious could be so good for me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% of all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text DARK to 64,000. Text DARK to the number 64,000. That's DARK to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
But with Dunning, the sheriff, I can't believe that wife would have a Jim Dunning for Sheriff bumper sticker and the sheriff's plate on her vehicle. It's like, he has enemies, right? Your husband has fucking enemies, don't you think? Do you want to be singled out by any of them that have gotten out of jail since or friends of theirs that he put away for a certain amount of time? Do you want them to know that's who you are? You think it's all high fives? Some of them might be fucking high slaps to your middle of your forehead before you turned around and choked out and shot in the back of the head. But I mean, maybe that's just me staying paranoid. So she goes to the Target and she buys some items to donate for a local Christmas toy and food drive. She enters the Target at 9:30 a.m. At 10 a.m., Charles Severance can be seen entering the Target on surveillance. He's clean cut at this point. He's a younger man. He's got a bomber jacket on. He's got a Dracula hairline, same one I got. A little thicker, it looks like his is, but you know the Dracula hairline. And he walks around the Target, and he passes Nancy at some point and goes down to tie his shoe and looks up a bit. You can see it on the surveillance video. He follows her for half an hour after this until exiting behind her after purchasing nothing. And Nancy drives home with all the gifts for the kids, the underprivileged kids in the area. She pulls into the attached garage of her home. She heads inside the home with her purchases and calls a friend at 10:54 a.m. Soon after, there's a knock at the door. Not expecting anyone, Nancy, her plans are to go for lunch and then meet with friends to organize Christmas food drives and gift drives. Young Charles Severance, bomber jacket, evil eyes, he's got a widow's peak, they say, at this time. That Dracula haircut, I mean, it's going to go deep. He's going to have a fucking horseshoe by the time we get to him when he's caught. Spoiler alert. But at this time, when he's younger, in his mid-30s, he's got the little widow's peak, the Dracula cut, pure black. His eyes, his hair, black maybe as well, are the latex gloves he's got on. And silver is this five-shot mini revolver in his right hand. Nancy says, "Can I help you?" when she opens the door. And Severance says, we know this from his writings, "I ask the questions." These writings were written in his Manifesto of Hate. That phrase, you would refer to the book, The Parable of the Knocker by Brian Porter.
Porter was a prosecutor, the main prosecutor in the Severance case. He talks about the Manifesto of Hate. This is where we get these quotes from. So, Severance shoots Nancy in the chest. She falls back into the house. The second shot rings out and it goes through her arm, I believe her left. And that was her arm that was coming up trying to defend herself. Nancy falls into a table, knocking down family photos, vacations, little tuxedoed gentlemen and girls in her life. The girls probably wearing dresses, not tuxedos, depending on the year. And she falls onto her back at the foot of the staircase behind her. Severance walks up and finishes her with a shot direct to her head behind her left ear. The bullets are small .22 caliber. They don't leave casings. They do the trick, however. Severance leaves immediately after she's definitely on her way out. She's not dead, but she's gurgling with that bullet racking around in her brain. And he doesn't steal anything afterwards. He doesn't leave a trace, actually. The execution is complete, and he's gone within minutes of having knocked on the door. Severance saw this as a revenge act for the custody of his son being taken from him. He wrote in his fucking, what's it called? The Parable of the Knocker, quote, "They kidnap and then they die." End quote. This was revenge, a revenge killing against the sheriff and his office. For the next decade and a half, Sheriff Jim Dunning will be suspected in his wife's death. There are no suspects except for Jim Dunning. In fact, he would live under that cloud of suspicion until his own death. Severance, in this case, gained his revenge and then some. So like 15 years later, on Monday, November 11th, 2013, Severance has just spent his time. He's running. I have to go off the top of my head here because of the horrible storm that we suffered out here. No, just wind from the horrible storm many of you suffered there in the state. Off the top of my head, he had an Airbnb. No, it was a bed and breakfast in the early 2000s. And he had clawfoot tubs out front of those residences that he was renting. And he would fill them up with water and take baths out front. So we're getting to know Severance just enjoying his win here. Mentally, he's making the games, the Dungeons and Dragons type games, mental disorder, where he talks about these crimes and proposes the same situation that he was in to players of this fantasy role-playing games that he would do in his basement. And, man, he's just living the life until Monday, November 11th, my son's birthday, Remembrance Day, 2013, where he goes after the director of transportation for the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. This is 69-year-old Ron Kirby. He lived in an affluent area of Alexandria, known as Shooter's Hill, if you can believe it, with his wife. Kirby had no direct relationship to Severance. There was the fact that he had been a leading force in the effort to build a new Woodrow Wilson Bridge, a fairly unknown U.S. president, except for when you watch The Simpsons your whole life. Severance opposed the proposed location of this new bridge. He wanted to move it south into Fairfax, and he proposes during his days on the campaign trail. So Ron Kirby wants to build this bridge, and he lives in a brick bungalow with a front porch on Elm Street in Alexandria, only a mile from where Nancy Dunning, the Queen of Delray, as they called her, had been dethroned a decade previous. So, on Monday, November 11th, 2013, Ron's wife leaves for a doctor's appointment at 9 a.m., and she has meetings she needs to get to. All of these women, well, there's two of them here, they are philanthropists, spending their husband's money, all right? I don't want to be too shitty about that, but their purpose in having this money available to them, and a lot of it's tax write-offs, and you get to act like a hero while you're doing it, But, you know, this is how they spend their time. They could spend it worse. They could spend it worse. And they do it doing toy drives and community fucking helping out events. We're not all living up here on a hill drinking your blood. We're going to come down once in a while and give you a Teddy Ruxpin. So she has these meetings in the afternoon. And at 11:30 a.m., Ron, the bridge builder, Kirby, takes a call from a plumber. I hope I didn't get that misconstrued there. Ron's wife is the one who left for the appointment, and Ron is at home. And the plumber says that he'll be 15 minutes late. And Ron's like, holy shit, there's nothing I hate more than, you know, tardiness. So when the plumber arrives at 11:45 a.m., there is no answer at the door. He actually is there in 15 minutes. He calls again, and Ron Kirby does not answer. The plumber then leaves for his next appointment, but not before seeing a gray-haired, bearded man running away from the scene, he'll recall later. A family member of the Kirbys will soon call in and not hear any answer, and then they will go to the house, and I believe this is one of their kids, and finds Ron dead. He has two shots to the chest, one in his hip. Presumably, he took that hit as he turned and ran away. He has his glasses in his hand that are shattered by a bullet. He had been reading. They see a book there. Reading a book when the knock came at the door. Ron Kirby dies in the foyer. A bullet is recovered from the piano in the house and the radiator. There are five shots in total and no shell casings left on the ground. A .22 LR North American firearm, a five-shot mini revolver with Remington subsonic ammunition, like I know what the fuck I'm talking about, is what was probably used. Only one five-shot LR .22 mini revolver produced in America. So Charles Severance loved that same weapon, we'll find out. The .22 caliber LR. LR stands for long rifle rounds, and they can hold more gunpowder. He likes the small revolver. He can keep it concealed. It doesn't have casings. The .22 caliber bullet is not a very effective round, but when you have the LR rounds, the long rifle rounds, they have more gunpowder in them. Severance had the smallest yet most powerful American-made weapon he could own. Let's move on now to 3 months later, and this crime is cold as the Dunning case with Sheriff Dunning, who was dying, and he moved. Actually, Sheriff Dunning moved after his wife Nancy was killed because the whole community thought that he had done it or hired somebody to do it. He's gone. But now with this new murder of Kirby, and so similar, people are starting to believe, wait, maybe there is a shooter on the loose. Even though it's 10 years later, it's just so similar. Someone walks up to a door, knocks, and then they're blown away and nothing stolen from the house, and they leave, and a gray-haired, gray-bearded man is thought to have done this. 3 months after this second murder, Ruth Ann Lodato, she's a music teacher, she's an organist at her church, and she is a sister to a general district court judge. Devoutly religious, she lived across the street from her own childhood home. Her husband, Norm, leaves for a doctor's appointment. This is what these people do in these fucking affluent areas. They go to doctor's appointments and they have meetings about how they can spend some of their money that will be negated through tax purposes on helping people. But I don't want to be too much of a victim shamer here. Ruth Ann, she has some afternoon piano lessons at the house later as her husband goes out and does fucking litigation work. And she calls her daughters, who are all over the world. They're not vacationing. They're just exploring the world, right? And getting some perspective. So her mom, Ruth Ann, she lives at the house and she's ailing. She is not doing so hot. And she is a personal support worker, or in the States they call it a healthcare aide, I believe, that lives with them. Her name's Jeanette. Ruth Ann, she's sitting at a table prepping for the music lessons later that afternoon. She's drinking tea. She's thinking about lunch when a knock comes at the door. She opens the door and is shot in the chest fatally. She's also shot once in the left arm. She's not quite dead yet, but that first shot to the chest is fatal. And I got to tell you something. Getting shot, not that I know, I don't know, but I've had dreams about it, is way scarier than you might think. From my experience in my dreams, getting shot is so fucking scary because someone's standing there with an extension of themselves just looking at you, overloading on you, powering on you, and there's nothing you could do about it because you can't make the 2 meters to them to rip the gun from them, especially if you've been shot already. You can't make the 15 feet to that gun. Guns are so fucking scary. It makes people bold, and it makes you weak, and they can just fire on you. There's nothing you can fucking do about it. So she's dead off that first chest shot. The shooter enters the house after hitting her in the left arm, and he comes up to her, and he's about to finish the job when the PSW, the healthcare aide, Jeanette, enters the living room. She's dealing with... I'm sorry. I'm fucking struggling here. With Ruth Ann's mom. And she's like, what the fuck is going on in here, Ruth Ann? And Ruth Ann's like, oh, fucking dying over here. And the shooter, who we know was Charles Severance, points the gun at the healthcare worker, shoots her once in the arm, shoots her again, but it's an errant shot, and then he leaves. And they can't figure out initially why he leaves right there without finishing her off. The thing is, it's a 5-shot revolver he has, this mini revolver he has that he's in love with. You know, I feel some autism here. I feel some autism, like where you get stuck on things. It's what you like is what you like. He likes the mini revolver. He likes the 22 caliber shots in it because it's the most, with the long rifle shots, the LR-22, it's the most explosive, damaging shot you can get out of this mini. And he's like, ah, fuck, I wish I had gotten myself something that had a few more rounds in it. He only has 5 shots. He doesn't leave because he has mercy. He leaves because he has no more bullets to shoot. The PSW, the healthcare aide, she's shot once. She gets up and she rushes to Ruth Ann's mother, who's in the back there, and pushes the old lady at the back door. Ruth Ann, by the way, she is by herself and she's gasping for breath, but she's like, let's get the fuck out of here before he comes back. She pushes the old lady to a neighbor. They call 911. And to her credit, Jeanette, this nurse's aide, I think it's Franco, her last name, she comes back into the house and waits with Ruth Ann, who's been shot in the chest and in the arm, until officers arrive at 11:30 a.m. Ruth Ann clings to life still at this point, and she's able to tell the officers that she doesn't know who the man was, which doesn't help much. But the description from the two bloody women is of a gaunt, older white man, probably in his late 50s, with an unkept gray beard and thinning head of unkept gray hair. Ruth Ann Lodato was rushed to hospital, but unfortunately she did die from her injuries. 5 shots, 3 at Ruth Ann, 2 at Jeanette. Jeanette would share, she heard the knocker say something before the first gunshots. Quote, it was probably something biblical, you know, but that's all I got. The reason he didn't finish them, like I said, was he ran out of bullets. Unkept is an apt descriptor for the knocker. His squirrely appearance matched his mind. Detectives canvass the area. Neighbors, they do have security footage. A composite sketch is put up, and it's really close to the way he looks. Jeanette recalled, and that's the nurse's aide, recalled not seeing the gun. She only saw a black hole in the sleeve of the attacker's coat before it erupted with a ball of flame, like a wizard releasing violent magic upon her. Detectives accurately deduced that they are looking for a suspect with a mini revolver, specifically the one I described previously, The five shots, the lack of shell casings that supports this. Here's a quote from the daughter of Ruth Ann. It's about gun violence. It's on a survivor's website of gun violence. It's called Moments That Survive. Quote, "The last time I saw my mom was at the airport a month earlier. I had cried while saying goodbye, and she had told me not to worry, that I would have the time of my life, and that she and my dad would be over to visit soon. They planned to visit in March, but it never happened. My mom didn't get to see me graduate from college, see my sister get married, or meet her four eventual grandchildren. She won't grow old with my dad like she was supposed to." End quote. 1,000 tips roll in. In the book on this case by prosecutor Brian Porter, read by Porter, by the way, it's really good. It's called The Parable of the Knocker by Brian Porter, and again, it's free and Audible. Not fucking... not allowing me to do ads for them anymore for some reason. They talk in that book, Porter does, of tips that come in. Like this, quote, "I saw an old man with a gray beard get on a train at the King Street Station." End quote. What the fuck are they going to do with that kind of tip? I've always been in the mind that any lead should be followed up on. But man, that example brought home the reality and frustration investigators must experience in these cases. The public, overall, is either dumb as shit, or dumb as shit people are most likely to jump at any opportunity to contribute their 2 cents. Judging by every comment section I've ever perused, I'm going to take solace in the latter and try to hold on to some hope for humanity. I'm starting to sound like Severance here. This is how it happens. Some manic maniac gets the idea that he knows better than everyone else. The beard slowly gets longer. The receding head of hair, wilder at the sides and down the back of the scalp. The eyes sink deeper. Then the loved ones begin backing away. The idea of the world being against you grows like a weed that sprouts from the face and head in the way I described. Before a plan begins to form, one of revenge, or suicide, or both. And maybe that's just me, but anyways, let's get back to the story. I'm sorry, there's a war going on outside, a storm going on outside. You know that song by Mobb Deep? There's a war going on outside. No man is safe from, you could run, but you can't hide forever. From the streets that we done took. You walking with your head down, scared to look. You shook, cause ain't no such thing as halfway crook. No? They never around with the beef cooks in my part of town. It's similar to Vietnam, no? All right, that's fine. Hopefully this episode never fucking sees the light of day. I'm a mess here. I cannot pull this together, I don't think. I don't think I'm going to be able to put this out. I'm going to keep trying, though. The name Charles Severance first became known to investigators after following up on a tip about a strange man with a gray beard and receding hairline. This was not Severance himself, but a man whom had attended college with Charles Severance in a past life, and he told police that they should look into him, into Charles Severance. Christ, you think I'm strange? Wait till you meet Charlie. Surveillance footage from neighbors of Ruth Ann Lodato revealed that a late 90s model maroon station wagon fleeing the scene. So this is a 15 mile per hour neighborhood, and there's a vehicle driving like crazy out of the area at that time of the Lodato murder, and they focus in on it, and they see there's a gray bearded white man driving it. Severance owned a 1999 maroon Ford Escort station wagon that fit the description of this vehicle. At the same time, ballistics revealed that the same type of ammo and odd gun type were used in all three of the Alexandria doorstep murders. Because the ammo-firearm combo were so unique, it was determined that a serial shooter was indeed responsible for what previously seemed to be random killings. Severance's parents are located by investigators, but they will give no details. They reach out to Charles, who is living with a girlfriend at this time, and Charles responds to the threat of arrest by putting on a tricorn hat. Picture the hat that George Washington's wearing and all the fucking, not pictures of him, the paintings of him, I think. Yeah, paintings. And then He walks, does Charles Severance in this tricorn hat, to the Russian embassy to seek asylum. This is in 2014 now. As he fancied himself an Edward Snowden type. The Russians at the embassy basically tell him to go away. Actually, they caught him trying to hide behind a welcomed visitor of the embassy, and they called the Secret Service. Severance fled, holding his little fucking tricorn hat tight to his bald head. Severance was finally tracked down at a public library, where his vehicle was spotted parked out front of. He was living in this vehicle at the time. He had his gun in there, and they're able to arrest him based on gun charges because he's not supposed to have a gun at all. He had a lot of gun charges in his past. He's arrested in the library without incident. Despite his disdain for authority, Severance respected the code of silence in the most sacred of places. And that's my opinion. The library is the most sacred of places. Information there that you can choose, you can pick from, you can learn from. It's not pressed on you. Severance had been researching survival in the wilderness in there. Severance is brought in for questioning. This on Thursday, March 13th of 2014. It quickly became obvious to investigators that they had a live one here. Severance, with his delusions of grandeur, Charlie Manson aesthetic, and penchant for running his mouth like a slobbering junkyard dog off its chain, left no doubt that he was the man they were looking for. And there is some writing that survived here after all. The three murder locations formed a triangle around an Alexandria landmark, a cannon, abandoned during the French and Indian War in 1755, General Edward Braddock's cannon. Braddock died in battle and was succeeded by a young George Washington. This, however, is not a history class. If it was, it would be a very poor one. I like to fucking throw that out there like I could do a history class on this shit. But I can't, so I'll just say that. Like, maybe I could tell you more if I had the time, but I don't. This isn't a history class. And I'm not interested in delving too deep into Charles Severance's ideas and what he stood for or who he saw himself as, but he did wear a funny little hat like George Washington. I'm certain he saw himself as some kind of American hero, a revolutionary that shot helpless, innocent women in the chest and the back of the head in his battles. From his writings, and in an effort to be biblical, Severance wrote his parable of the knocker. I'll share this from it. Quote, "Knock and the door will be opened. Knock, talk, enter. Kill, exit, murder." I think he covered the murder part with the kill, but hey, you know, let's not nitpick here. In court, Severance's ex-wife makes an appearance. She tells the judge and jury that from the moment she received full custody of her son in 2001 until Severance's arrest in 2014, she had woken up every day and gone to sleep every night, fearing for her and her boy's life. Severance sent threatening letters to her parents meant for her all those years. He also was relentless in trying to figure out which city and state she'd reestablished within and sent letters to schools all within that state that I'm not aware of which state it was, hoping that it would land at a school where his son was at so his son could feel some of the fear and pressure he was hoping to put on his ex-kin. Severance stares at his ex-wife in the court with eyes seemingly made of coal, his brain on fire. If looks could kill, the woman on the stand would have spontaneously combusted. A quick whip of the eye from Severance during his trial seemed withering to those attending. My own television began warping, watching a YouTube video where Severance glanced at the camera. And we got our notes back. Charles Severance is a bad man, and not in a good way. In the end, Severance was easily found guilty. It dragged a little, did the trial, with him typically firing his lawyers along the way, but eventually they got to it, and he was sentenced to 3 life sentences, 1 for each victim, plus 48 years. Severance is in Wallens Ridge State Prison in Big Stone Gap, Virginia. He spends his time writing unhinged letters to perceived enemies. And if you want, you can reach out to him with a letter. But here's a word of advice. Don't. For if you knock, he will answer. He is, after all, known as
the knocker.
And that will do it. How's everybody doing out there? Fucking... Man, I'm trying. I'm really trying. There's a storm going on outside. That whole thing got fucked up. I think it was good enough, though. I think I'm okay with it. Just bouncing in and out of my notes and my script. But I knew the case well enough, I think, to get through it. Thank you to everybody who signs up for Patreon and for Apple Plus, for the exclusives. Thank you for everybody listening. You want to hear a story? So, I'm trying to get out of this whole weird thing with my dad dying and the way in which he died, where he was asleep. He went to bed and someone knocked on his door. He woke up and he died. The knocker resonates with me for that reason. I went to see my dad's old place when I went up to his bedroom he was in this very small little house, and he slept upstairs. His bed was unmade from him getting out of it, and he still had a glass of water beside the bed, which he always told me to take a glass of water to bed. And his sandals were beside the bed, and I got to be there and see that. Man, that's all it is, you know. One day someone knocks on your door and you never get to go back to bed. There's a war going on. Anyways. Eyes cocked, doors locked, and truly stay paranoid. For all of you that dabble in the darkness still. It's nice. We got to get into the light. We got to get into the light. We got to be out there with people and with supportive people and have people around us that protect us. I was underneath a crabapple tree earlier today, and I was thinking about my dad, and I heard a bird above me. It's a crow, actually. You're not going to believe this, but a big fat crow. They live in the trees here. Land. And I heard the... crab apple, a few of them fall, and I put my hand out and I caught one. And I looked at it, it was half rotten, and I took a little bite out of it. You gotta look at the good side of life. Eyes cocked, doors locked, stay paranoid. Talk at you soon.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.